You are listening to Real World News.
Interview with Paul Conet at the School of Humanities, Uruguay. On the weekend of June the 14th and the 15th, PhD Paul Conet gave a lecture on waste management and zero waste strategy in Montevideo, Uruguay. Paul Conet is graduated from the University of Cambridge in environmental toxicology and chemistry. He has been investigating waste management for 28 years. The conference was entitled Waste Management, Reduce and Classify, Waste Incineration, a Better Option, The Zero Waste, A Future Without Garbage. He gave a conference on Friday where he explained the 10 points of its zero waste strategy, and on Saturday he participated in a workshop and answered some questions for Real World Radio. He noticed that currently Uruguay was developing a huge incineration system that would bring no money to the country, mainly because it is run by European corporations. Moreover, it creates few jobs, which is also an economic problem. He also pointed the informal waste pickers as some of the responsible. I would argue that the city of Montevideo should be putting its money into making the existing operations safer and more effective for the people involved, he said. Our European consumption patterns, now emulated by developing countries such as China, are not sustainable anymore. He urged for a change, and waste could be the best place to start this change. Basically, the 10 points of this zero waste strategy are separation, door-to-door collection, composting, recycling, reuse of waste. The 5 next steps aim to reduce waste through political initiatives, taxes, economic incentives for citizens, waste separation facilities, a better industrial design, and education through the creation of a research center, and finally, backup and temporary landfills. He gives the example of the city of San Francisco, which is getting 80% reduction of their waste coming from landfills. Finally, he called for a real community responsibility to manage our waste better and to have more sustainable cities and consumption. He argued that incineration has a higher cost than the zero waste system in terms of transport and manufacture.
Yes, we talk about zero waste, the zero waste strategy for sustainability. We would need 4 planets if everybody consumed like an American. We would need 2 planets if everybody consumed like a European. And meanwhile, we have India and China copying our consumption patterns. Clearly, something has got to change. And the best place to start that change is with waste. If we make it every day, all of us make waste every day by mixing things together. But with good political leadership, if we separated those materials and followed it with door-to-door collection, then we can compost, we can recycle, we can reuse, and we can repair. And at the end of that, what I call community responsibility, then we can bring in industrial responsibility. We have to say to industry, if we can't reuse it, recycle it, or compost it, you shouldn't be making it. So this is in outline the zero waste strategy. It's no to incineration, no to landfills, and those disposal techniques may have been acceptable in the 20th century, but they're not acceptable in the 21st century. Every time you burn something, every time you bury something, you've got to go all the way back to the beginning of our system of extraction, manufacture, consumption, waste. But you don't have to go back to the beginning with recycling and reuse, repairing, composting, and so on. And here in Uruguay, you're talking about your politicians have been taken to see a massive incinerator in Brescia, Italy. And that would be a huge mistake in Uruguay because it's a huge amount of money. Most of that money will leave Uruguay because it won't be a Uruguayan company that builds this. It will be an Italian company or at least a European company. And for this huge amount of money, you get very few jobs created. Meanwhile, you will be competing with the jobs that you do have with the classifiers here, the people that go with their horses and carts and pick up the material. There are thousands of people getting a living from the same materials that will be burnt in that incinerator. So I would argue that the city of Montevideo should be putting its money into making the existing operation more effective and more safe for the people involved, instead of frittering away the money on this huge burner, instead of destroying resources, support the systems that are currently recovering those materials, but make it more efficient, more effective. You could provide, I would divide Montevideo up into a number of jurisdictions, 8, 10, 15, and in each of those jurisdictions, I would ask the local authorities to provide a building, a warehouse, in which these current waste pickers could operate. They could separate their materials, do it in a clean fashion, have showers and things like that, and as I say, make the whole system more effective, create more jobs for a fraction of the money that is being wasted on this incinerator. I cite the example of San Francisco. San Francisco is getting 80% reduction of the material that once went to landfill with a combination of source separation, composting, recycling, repair, reuse and repair. And an incinerator, this incinerator they saw in Brescia, is only getting 75% because you get 25% left as ash. So at a fraction of the capital cost, San Francisco has shown you can get more diversion from landfill than you can with an incinerator. And at the same time, you create more jobs, and you're moving in a they are moving in a sustainable direction. A sustainable society has to be, by definition, essentially a zero-waste society. We've got to convert the throwaway society, which is a linear society, into a circular society. Another way of putting that is that we have to get closer to nature's model. Nature recycles everything. Everything is recycled in nature. But we produce this one-way system, which ends with landfills and incinerators, and we've got to stop that.
Okay, and you mentioned 10 points belonging to your zero-trash system, isn't it? What are the main points of
it? I've mentioned some of those 10 steps already. The first step is separation. It's the 10 things on our end of our hands, which are the magic machines. They can separate. If you mix things together, you get waste. If you separate, you have resources. Step two is door-to-door collection. So once the citizen has separated, or the business has separated, then you need a system of picking it up. And then when you've picked up the materials, the organics will go to a composting facility. In Montevideo, I believe you have a lot of farmers are using the food from restaurants to feed the animals, which is better. That's great. Continue to do that. But any organics left over from the kitchen could go to a composting facility for anaerobic digestion. So that was step three. Step four is recycling, which is currently going on. The materials are gathered, separated, made into bundles or bales that are suitable for industry, and then that is shipped to industry to reuse again. Step four. Step five is reuse and repair, which is done locally. So you'd have in each jurisdiction, I would encourage the government to provide a facility where you could take old appliances, furniture, maybe the materials from deconstruction of buildings, and sell these back to the public. Certainly, there are very successful examples of this in America, in Europe, in Australia, New Zealand, and they are very exciting for fighting poverty, for job creation, job training, and also as seeds for community development. The idea of reinventing the village in the city, fighting the anonymity of living in a big city, because people like going to these facilities. They meet people in these facilities. Then the next, those are the first five steps, and we've seen, as I said, San Francisco is getting 80% diversion with those steps, and in Italy we've got over 200 communities getting over 70%, some 80%, some even 90%, and very quickly using this same approach. Then the other five steps from 6 to 10 really deal with reducing the residuals, what we currently can't recycle, reuse or compost, to a minimum. Step 6 is waste reduction initiatives, various initiatives by government, putting a tax on plastic shopping bags, making sure that businesses use reusable bottles, that parents use reusable diapers for their babies, not throwaway. Getting the plastics and paper and throwaway objects out of canteens in schools, colleges, institutions. There are many things that we can do with waste reduction. And then step 7 is economic incentives. Drive what you want using an incentive. For example, there's the pay-by-bag system. So the bag you put out for compostables is free. The bag you put out for recyclables is free. But the residual bag, the more you make, the more you pay. And there are different ways of doing that. For example, in Seattle, They gave citizens, all householders, the option. You can have a large container for your residual fraction, you can have a medium size, or a small. But you pay more money for the big one than you do for the small one, and so on. So a very simple, elegant economic incentive, and it has a big effect on people's attitudes. So now that was step seven. Step eight. This is when you want to go beyond 80%. Some people are content. If they can get it down to 80%, they say, that's great. That's more than you can get with an incinerator, which is only 75%. But if you really want to go further, then what I recommend is that you build, in front of the existing landfills, a residual separation facility. And they built these in Nova Scotia. And here, the more recyclables are pulled out, more toxics are pulled out, and the dirty organic fraction is stabilized with a second composting operation. So the dirty organic fraction is composted, and the material is then landfilled. What you've done above ground is to stabilize it biologically. So when it goes underground, it makes less leachate, less methane, less odors. And they're very happy with those landfills in Nova Scotia. Now, step nine actually involves putting into that residual screening facility a zero waste research center, where we involve our universities and students to actually study our mistakes, our industrial mistakes, our bad packaging and products. And this is where we say, if we can't reuse it, recycle it or compost it, you shouldn't be making it. We need better industrial design for the 21st century and to get our higher education involved in that process, because it's the stepping stone to other aspects of sustainability. Zero waste is the stepping stone. So with zero waste, you produce composting. Composting supports alternative agriculture, sustainable agriculture. Zero waste involves deconstruction of old buildings, and that feeds into sustainable architecture. So step nine, then, is better industrial design, which is part of a larger conglomeration of issues called industrial responsibility, which I won't go into. And then finally, step 10 is the backup landfill, the transitional landfill that we have to use right now. But the idea is that in the next 10, 15, 20 years, we absolutely do our best to minimize what's going into that landfill. And I argue that that backup landfill, which takes the stabilized dirty organic fraction and the currently non-recyclable material, is far superior to the toxic ash landfill that you get if you were to build an incinerator.
Okay, and in terms of energy, what is the main difference between incineration and zero trash system?
Well, let me deal with the main difference between incineration and zero waste right up front. Before we get to the energy, which is an important question, the big difference between incineration and what I've described, the residual screening and research facility, is incineration attempts to make the residuals disappear. Make our bad design disappear. In the zero waste strategy, we want to make it very visible. We want the residuals very, very visible, because they are our mistakes, and we need to change those mistakes if we want to move towards sustainability. So that's a big difference in incineration and zero waste. Incineration wants to make the residuals disappear. It's supporting the throwaway industry. We want to make the residuals very visible. As far as energy is concerned, the irony here is that incinerators are a waste of energy. Four times more energy is saved by recycling and reusing than from burning to create electricity. And the reason is that when you burn, all you're doing is tapping into a relatively small fraction of the calorific value. You get about 25% efficiency. But what you can't tap into with incineration is the embedded energy, the energy that you put into extraction of raw materials, transport of those raw materials, the manufacture of those raw materials, more transport, and even more transport when the consumers get those things. None of that energy is accessible via incineration, but it is reclaimed, or rather saved, if you recycle and reuse. If you recycle, you cut out all the energy use in extraction and transport to manufacture. If you reuse, you cut out the impacts of both extraction and manufacture. And similarly, the argument applies to composting as well, because you're reducing the use of synthetic fertilizers and topsoil and so on. But in addition to that, composting is so good because it holds onto the carbon. All that organic material, that cellulose, the bits of wood and so on, if that goes to incinerate, it immediately becomes CO2. But if you compost it, that wood and that cellulose is held in the soil for many, many months or many years. And also, if you're adding compost to the soil, making the soil more fertile, you're growing more things, more plants, which again is helping to remove CO2 from the air.
Okay, and well, I have a last reflection about the role of recycling. Well, we know that the trash gestion management is a big issue in developing countries in relation with the informal economy. And what is your point of view about this, the issue of community and the zero trash system for the informal economy?
Oh, I think it's very much we are in tune with the community. We need local solutions. We need to support the local initiatives which are in the informal sector. They need our respect, not our distaste. We need to improve their operation conditions. And this is going on in different countries. I think there are good models now happening in Colombia, in Brazil, in Argentina. We visited facilities in Buenos Aires where there are facilities for the rag pickers. And so trucks are delivering the materials to them. They're not picking it at the landfill. They, at their facility, they are separating and upgrading this material and making money from those materials. And then the government, in turn, removes the stuff that they can't recycle. So it's a very, very good system. So it's dangerous work. It's dirty work for the rag pickers. Our role, I think, in government, or the role of government, is to benefit from their willingness to do this dirty job, but to provide them safer working conditions and provide them career structures. I mean, I was very inspired in Buenos Aires because the director of this facility that we saw, this green center, employing 67 people, 23 years ago, she was picking waste on the streets. Now, her daughter has grown up. And she's got a university degree as an agronomist. Her son is at university studying music. And she's very proud of this. And that was only possible because somebody with initiative made the support system work for them. So the message to the developing world is don't waste your money on huge machines which are going to destroy our resources, steal this material from our children and grandchildren. Put your money into those operations, those local operations that are recovering resources, have been doing it for dozens of years, and that's where the return will be.
You are listening to Real World News.